so she has she has moved to that side. We also have Mr. Virgil Stiffield, who is the DDG responsible for labor policy and industrial relations, and Welile from my office, Welile Group. Thank you, Chair.
Now, thank you very much. I see there is somebody called Prince Matibela. Can he indicate where he is coming from?
Thank you, Chair. I am coming from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, so I'm just here to take the minutes of the meeting for PMG.
You must then, after your name, you must write PMG.
Okay, I will do. I'll do that, Chair. Thanks. Okay.
No, thank you very much, honourable members. Welcoming everybody. Welcome, GM and the DG in leading the team today. Can we switch off our phones and we mute? We're not going to be able to see my picture because the network is a problem. I'll just try now so that at least people are able to see me. Today we are going to start with the third and the fourth quarter presentation, which has then been circulated to members about 2 or 3 days ago. And then after that, after we have gone through, as I have announced last week, that among other things that we're going to do today, do a preliminary assessment of the department from quarter one up to the last week. So I hope members are prepared. They've prepared themselves for today's meeting. What we then do, we'll check with the Deputy Minister. Is there anything that you would like to, as the ministry, to say before we then allow the DG to take us through the quarters, which is going to be 3 and 4? I'll hand over to you, GM. Is there anything that you would like to do? Over to you, GM.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, our DG, Ndatela Mati, and all our officials who are present today. I think in short, Honorable Chairperson, that the fourth quarter presentation by our department will give a summary and synopsis of the Auditor General's report and the annual report itself. And we have, as you know, that committed ourselves to achieving the clean audit in the current financial year, the year under review, after almost 4 years of unqualified audit opinions and findings. And little did we know that there will be a pandemic disruption which impacted on our entire plan sources yearly and shifted our entire resources and almost changing the status quo. And to achieve clean audit, honorable members, does not necessarily mean producing credible and reliable financial statements that are free of material misstatements. This needs to be made clear. It also means that our financial reporting must be useful on measured performance, reliable and aligned to the predetermined objectives in the annual performance plan. And now this because we very difficult to achieve, especially during the third quarter and largely in the fourth quarter due to major pandemic disruptions. You would agree with me. This presentation, honorable members, will highlight the critical focus areas in terms of the strategic plans and ATCs, as well as reflect on how the plan's targets were affected during this period and how we managed to achieve some. And I know for sure that it is almost very rare that we commend our officials, because no one ever finds anything commendable with the work, with our work as politicians. But honorable members, I'm sure, I think it is befitting that we commend this committee, the department and officials led by the DG, that the Jubilee Lamati, that even under the most difficult period in our time, we managed to maintain the same audit outcomes as the previous year. And this was not an easy task for all of us here. And I think at some point, credit needs to be given away too. As states, governments, and countries collapsed, members, during the pandemic, we are still here trying to do better and to improve the lives of our people and do better. I don't take this lightly, nor do I take a small gesture, honorable members. To me, this is very big, and we must be grateful for this, all of us, and forge ahead faster forward. We need to remain more focused and stay strong under the circumstances. The worst of our time is over, and we have seen people perish over this pandemic. We have all lost friends, partners, relatives, and family, and we owe it to all of them to be kind and remember where we are, where we were 7 months ago. We hardly ever believed that we would make it this far, and we have come this far, and we need to thank God for that. We can't afford to be too demanding and perfectionist when there was anxiety and panic, and we were all shocked, but tried to remain calm in the days when each day was a life lesser than the day before. The Lord has been with us, and we must be grateful for this message, honorable members. Allow me at this point in time, honorable members, to introduce the presentation to the committee on the fourth quarter report of the department that led by our Chief Justice Lamati. I thank you for your audience, and may God bless you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, GM. Tell me that just an understanding who's Jigs Jonker, or is a member of the GA? Is it from the NCOP?
Good morning, parliamentary researcher in the Democratic Alliance.
You're a parliamentary researcher, okay, for the GA. In future, when you come in, please do put that in bracket that you are a researcher. But fine, we welcome you.
Thank you.
Gigi, I'm handing over to you.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. Good morning, Mr. President and honorable members, Deputy Minister. Willie will upload the presentation. I'm going to ask Mr. Sam Rotoba to help me with the presentation. As I indicated, Chair, I only have one eye today, so he's going to run the presentation for me. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, honorable members, honorable chairperson, DM, DG, my colleagues. I'm going to run through the presentation. I'm going to skip slides from 1 to 14. Because that gives you just the background. If you can go to slide number 14. Okay. Slide number 14, honorable chairperson and members, gives you an indication of our overall performance during the first quarter. You'll notice that on the protecting vulnerable workers, our performance was at 80%, and insofar as money, our performance was at 50%. And if you take the total number of planned indicators that were 19, we only managed to achieve 17. We did not achieve 2, which brings our performance to 89%. For the fourth quarter. If you can go to slide number 16. Slide number 16. Now on slide number 16, we give you an indication of the performance. Administration had three indicators, they achieved all of them. IES had four, achieved all of them. PES 4, achieved all of them. And where we had slight problems was in the LP and IR, where they had eight and only managed to achieve six, and the two were not achieved. Their overall performance was at 75%, which brings the performance at 89%. Can I move on to the next slide? Again, this is a summary of our performance over the year, because when we do our annual report, we normally look at our overall performance throughout the year and how we arrived at the 89%. You'll notice that in quarter one, IES and LPIR were the ones that performed at 50 and 86%, and during Q3, LP and IR was the only one that performed at 50% in the point eight, and quarter three again at 60%, and the fourth quarter at 75%, and a total of 89%. Can we move on to the slide number 19, because this is just a graphical performance. Slide number 19. On the IES, we normally provide our information also based on the provincial participation and input. But the provinces, Honorable Chairperson and members, you will also note that Gauteng will have, for instance, 24 labor centers, 18 in a different province, and so on and so on. So the total contribution of the labor centers is consolidated at a provincial level, consolidation at national level becomes our overall performance. So in this slide, in quarter four, the in IES on inspection, the provinces that did not perform quite well was Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Mpumalanga was west at 25%, and Northern Cape at 50%. However, if you can move on to the next slide, you'll also notice that in the public employment services, the provinces, all provinces, when it comes to PES, performed quite well, except for KwaZulu-Natal during quarter four, which met only three of its targets, and Mpumalanga, which also met three of its targets, and their performance were at 75% respectively. Now, if you can move on to the next slide, 21. On inspection and enforcement, again, when we do the comparison of quarter three and four, again, this is just a repeat of the information that we have outlined. If you can move to slide number 24. Now, on slide number 24, again, we give an indication of the performance per program, taking the summary that we have outlined. Administration, when it comes to communication, they achieved that. Slide number 25. On the annual financial statements and the irregular and fruitless expenditure, they achieved those indicators. I'm going to concentrate on those areas where we did not achieve. I think if you can skip slide number, go to slide number 30. Sorry. Okay. Now, again, members of parliament would normally ask us on the consequence management and in instances of non-performance, but also in terms of a whole range of other disciplinary-related matters. And this slide just gives you a sense in terms of the misconduct cases that were reported during the financial year. And again, this information is disclosed in our annual report, and it gives you a breakdown in terms of the racial breakdown, the gender breakdown, and the total number of cases that were reported. Then move on to the next slide. Again, we also provide those cases per province. You can move well in it. I'm going to skip all those slides because honorable members, during question time, we can entertain. But this is also a summary of the types of misconduct that were reported that our ER had to deal with. And the next slide on 34. Slide number 34, Welile. I think on slide number 34, the issues that we want to highlight here are the types of challenges that we normally face when processing most of these cases, because you depend on external people in some instances to conduct hearings. Some of them require more than one day, some of them get postponed and so on, and some could not be processed at the rate at which we would have liked because of the lockdown situation. However, honorable members, we are doing our best to process all those cases. If we can move to slide number 37, Welile. Slide number 37. Okay. Now on slide number 37, again we are giving you a summary against the overall target. The annual target that IES had was 220,000 inspections, and they managed to conduct 228,000, which is beyond the numbers that we have set, even though we had some provinces not performing well, because what we normally do is that where we have overachievements, those overachievements will then offset the underachievements in other areas, and this is understandable, honourable members, because in some instances where we have blitz inspections, we would normally take inspectors from different provinces to assist those provinces or labor centers to go into other areas where they will then assist where we realize that we are lacking or the level of compliance is not that good. Hence, the numbers will then offset. If you can move on to the next slide, I think it gives you the sectors that were reviewed. Slide number 41 gives you areas of non-compliance where and the kind of actions that we have taken. In most cases, they include the notices that the inspectors will normally issue in relation to the various sections of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the COIDA Act, and so on. I think if you can move to slide number 43. Slide number 43 gives you a sense in terms of the annual target of 1,640 reassessments that we have set ourselves to do, and 1,007 were conducted, which constitute 61.4%, and the slide also then gives you a breakdown in terms of each province. If we can move on, Welile. The next slide just gives you a sense in terms of the basic conditions of employment. We had a target of 1,666, that is 166,000 workplaces that we targeted to inspect, and of that, 167,000 were inspected, constituting 99%, and again, you have an indication of the inspections conducted per province, where in the Eastern Cape, for instance, you'll have 19,308, and they would have conducted an actual of 20,000, which was an overachievement by 7,409. Where else, if you take provinces such as KZN, they would have had 35,000, but they only conducted 33,600, which was a variance of less 1,639. The same applies to Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. You can move on to the next slide. This is the minimum wage analysis per quarter, and this gives you a sense in terms of the inspections that we conducted, but also where we found employers not complying. We then issued notices, but also took measures to assist the workers that were not paid in accordance with the national minimum wage. And the slide gives you the sectors in which those inspections were conducted, and the number of referrals that we made. You can go to the next slide, 47. And on slide 47, it gives you the amount of monies that we then recovered, which is passed on to the workers that were not properly paid, because whatever interventions we make, we do it on behalf of those workers, and you can see the totals at the bottom of 40087. And that is the total amount that was recovered. If you can move on to the next one, Welile. This just gives you in terms of those sectors that did not comply well in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, and where we conducted inspections and found that 4,337 were not complying, and the major culprit remain mainly in the wholesale community, which includes the domestic sector, manufacturing, and the hospitality and tourism. You can move on to to slide number 51, Welile. Now, in slide 51, you have a sense of, we're giving you a sense of the employment audit, the procedural audits that were conducted. Normally, this audit has to do with how employers are complying with a provision such as the UIF Act, a compensation fund, and so on. And again, you have we had a target of 14,531 procedural audits that we set ourselves, and we managed to achieve 15,576, which was a 93%. And of those, again, 1,460 were found to be non-compliant, and they were served with notices to enforce compliance within 14 days. And again, you have a sense of how the individual performance, the individual provinces perform. Can go on to the next slide, Welile. The next one relates to the payroll audit, where we had 5,307 payroll audits that were conducted, and out of those, 1,680, which constitute 4,225, were those that were found to have complied, but you also found the 1,054 that were non-compliant. And again, the slide gives you a sense in terms of the individual provincial performance. You can go to slide number 55. The slide gives you the performance when it comes to COIDA. Again, we have an annual target, the level of compliance, and the level of non-compliance, which is at 1,099, where we also issued notices for compliance. Slide number 4056. This gives you a sense in terms of the prosecutions against the different laws, the employment equity, DG reviews, reassessment, basic conditions of employment, UI compensation, and so on. And again, we give a breakdown of the individual performance by each province. Can go to slide number 57. Again, this now goes into a breakdown of the compliance in terms of the individual acts. I'm going to skip those because it's just a repeat of that information per legislation. If you can go to slide number 58. Welile. Again, the slide is very busy, but it gives you a sense in terms of the sectoral compliance. Members of Parliament initially would want detailed breakdown. We do have this information, however, when we had to deal with questions previously, where you wanted a sense in terms of the various sectors, we then had to provide this information after looking at our impact assessment, because our impact assessment reports are very, very long, trying to analyze this information for the purposes of CAID compliance and so on. Now I'm going to go to slide number 66. and move to slide number 67. This gives a sense in terms of the number of incidences that were received and finalized, and again we provide a breakdown per province. Can go to slide number 70. Now, normally we would be asked to indicate some of the challenges that would impact or have impacted on our performance during the financial year, and one of them was the issue that the branch had to deal with, which was the dwindling financial resources. Secondly, was the issue of the poaching of our inspectors by other departments, and we have had lots of discussions with Treasury around this matter and how we should explore other methods and so on. And thirdly, was this issue of the work protection and preservation. We know that quite a number of factories are faced with all sorts of challenges, and that also affects the inspection. And the contingency measures that were put in place had to do with either reviewing the rate of inspection. If we can move on, Welile. You can skip 71, we go to PES. In PES, like we said, the summary of achievement was very clear, honorable members, but we were also giving you a sense that whilst we have achieved quite well, we still have a number of labor centers and a number of provinces that are lagging behind. For instance, when it comes to the registration of work seekers, Mpumalanga province has not done very well. They were saved by other provinces that registered work seekers beyond them. If you can move on to the next slide, I think 74, all provinces achieved, 75, all provinces also achieved when it comes to the cancelling of work seekers. And if you can move to 76. Honorable members will notice that the province that struggled insofar as placement of work seekers that we registered are concerned was KwaZulu-Natal, which just missed their target. We can move on to the next slide. I think 77 and 78 are just a graphical representation. You can skip that. Now, just like in IES, honorable members, yeah, you can stop on that slide number, slide 80. Honorable members, I think that the biggest challenge that public employment services continues to face from that graph, you will notice that the registration of work seekers, which is depicted in blue, in all instances remains high. On the counseling services, we are doing well, but we are also having to do a catch-up because we have a large number of work seekers that were registered in the outer years that would not have been provided with counseling services. So you'll notice that in the Eastern Cape, the registration may be standing at just below 30,000, but the counseling services would be high. That is because in the previous financial year, you had more work seekers registered, and these people keep on coming back to our offices. And the counseling services is being expanded because we have introduced group counseling, we have introduced in centers like the youth centers, and where we have kiosks and self-service stations in the 64 labor centers, people are also able to assess themselves, and that is why we are picking up on the counseling, and we have seen the impact of those counseling services when it comes to the reception. However, when it comes to the registering of opportunities, which is depicted in blue, in green, you'll notice, honorable members, that we still have a lot of opportunities that are being registered with us, and in some instances, some opportunities will require like 1 day or 2 days, and a lot of people tend to resist taking such opportunities, where else they would prefer, if you look at the blue one, which is placement, and they look at long-term contracts that are 6 months up to a year, and that is why the placement is still very low. And we have done comparison with a number of other countries and against a number of opportunities registered. They range around 20% or 18%, and the private sector is currently somewhere at around 15% because they charge. But if you look at the PES, we are currently at 24%, which is not enough. We could do much more better, but given the economic climate and challenges that some learners are facing, our placement still remains very low, and this is the one thing that keeps us awake at night, because we would want to up that placement rate to be somewhere in the middle, or to make sure that all opportunities registered, which is green, are supplied with the relevant people, and we do our best to match each and every little opportunity that is registered with us, even though the final decision to appoint a person does not remain with us, it remains with the employer. If you can skip slide number 61 and go to slide number LPNIR. Slide number 62 are some of the actions that we move from slide 62. Let's go to 85, which is LPNIR. I think PES on those slides 82 up to 85 is just providing honorable members on the contingency measures and things that kept us awake, and what is it that we are going to do differently going forward. On slide number 86, LPNIR, you'll notice that LPNIR did not achieve on the national minimum wage, and this has to do with the delays that were in the third party, which is the National Minimum Wage Commission. And I think when we did our review, we looked at this indicator, and I think we also agreed with the AG that in future LPNIR will have to relook at this target and set a target that is within their control, because whilst they can refer whatever report to the National Minimum Wage Commission, they are not in control of the National Minimum Wage Commission. It has to follow its own process, and hence the indicator was not achieved due to delays at that level. If you can move on to the next one. Well, you can skip 87. It was achieved. You can skip 80. Yes, you can skip that one too. Okay. I think on the next one, on slide number 91, on the number of research services providers identified to deliver the research and monitoring agenda, this was not achieved. And the reasons include the time it took to complete the evaluation, also the data collection, and the program seems committed to look at the work targets and to make sure that those are achieved. And again, it has to do with also making sure that we set a target that is realistic. If you can move on to, you can move, I think, again, the slide number 92 just gives you, okay, slide number 92. Again, these are the challenges that the LPNIR colleagues face insofar as the national minimum wage, the whole question of the research, and on the right hand side, it gives honourable members a sense in terms of the actions and contingency measures that they've implemented. If you can go to slide number 96, Welin. Now, again, this just gives a summary of the performance, and again, this is the slide that it was provided in the upfront. You can skip that one, 97. I think it's just a repeat. Welide. I'm not sure if the CFO is connected. CFO, do you want to talk to the finances of the program through your chairperson? If he's not connected, I will proceed, chairperson. This is the summary information of our budget. Sorry, chairperson.
I just wanted to check if he or she not connected. If she is not, or he is not, I think you may continue if you are well versed with what you are
saying. That was Mr. Maduna.
Is he in?
It doesn't seem to be connected, chairperson. Should I proceed?
He's struggling to connect, chair.
Okay, you may then proceed,
thank you, sir.
Okay, now the next slide, honorable members and chairperson, gives you a sense in terms of the finances of the branch during the fourth quarter. We managed to spend 863 million. The breakdown was 253.5 in admin, 187.1 in IES, 138.1 in PES, and 284.1 in LPNIR. And the expenditure rate in administration was at 108%, 79% in IES, 115% in PES, and 97% within LPNIR, bringing the total expenditure to 99%. If you can move to the next slide. The next slide is just a breakdown of the economic classification, and again, it summarizes all the information in terms of current payments, which was 561. We spent 93%. On the transfers and subsidies to entities, we transferred 111%. On the payment for capital asset, it was at 120%, and the overall expenditure was at 99%. Can move on to the next slide, 99. Compensation of employees took 82% of the 383 million, whereas goods and services took 116% of the 178.2 million. bringing our total expenditure at the end of quarter four to 93%. You can move to the next slide. Now, the next slide gives a sense to honorable members the budget allocation of the 2020-21, where we have been allocated 3.6 billion rand, and during the special adjustments early this year as a result of having to fund COVID, honorable members were briefed about this cut. We had to surrender 261 million rand, and we also then had to make adjustments, and it left our budget at 3.3 billion, and that is before the transfers to entities. If you can move on to the next slide. Now, in terms of our compensation of employees, we lost 96.6 million. On goods and services, we lost 95.4. On transfers and subsidies, it was about 63.5 million. And on payments for capital assets, 6.3 million, which came to that total of 261 and the budget of 3.3 billion. Can move on to the next slide. Now, you can move to slide number 106 on supported employment enterprises. Now, supported employment enterprises had, no, just one slide number 105, Willie. Supported employment enterprises had two indicators. At the end of the fourth quarter, the one was achieved and the other one was not achieved. The target that was not achieved had to do with additional number of people employed within the SEE. If you can go to 106. Now, we had a target of 150 additional people that we were supposed to employ to expand the current establishment. And honorable members, this could not be achieved due to the fact that if you increase the numbers to 150 and we did not generate sufficient sales or received sufficient orders from the different provinces, and we are happy in the coming year as you have requested, and we have also done that in this presentation to give you a sense in terms of the individual factories, the orders they received, and the amount of money that we received. Because FEE receives about 140 million from the department as transfers, and the other half has to be generated from the products that were sold. However, if you look at the second one on the sales, whilst we may have overachieved and generated more money, the issue here, honorable members, was that there were orders that were placed, and this is something that happens normally across quite a number of government departments. If they look around and they realize that they have got savings, they will then place orders towards the end of the financial year, and in most cases we would not be able to produce and deliver those goods in time. So they will pay 50% and only when FEE finishes and deliver the goods will then recover those funds. And because of the quarter in which those funds would normally come in, hence you will see the 90% overachievement on the 10% target that was set. If you can move on to the next slide. for a leader. This is just a summary of what I said, but in the main, the orders came from the National Department of Health. And I think go to slide number 108, Welile. Now, when it comes to additional number of people, how we came with the 64, what we have provided is the province and the factors that would normally fall within that province, and we would give you a sense in terms of the number of people that were employed in each of those factories as at the 31st of March 2019, and the additional number of new people that were employed as at the 31st of March 2020. For instance, Bloemfontein had 53, new people would have been 7. And in total, you'll notice at the end that that is how we account for the additional 64. And the target of 150, like we said, could not be met because of those reasons. If you can move on to the next slide. Again, these are the race and gender. We often get these questions, honorable members, on what is the total number of Africans, colored, Indian, and so on. You will recall, honorable members, that some few years ago, the racial composition of these factories was predominantly white for historical reasons and so on. Now, as attrition happens, and now that we are no longer taking a lot of people who came from the army, who came from, who were booked on medical grounds from the police, we are now recruiting from special schools and kids that are finding it very difficult to enter the mainstream employment. Hence, we have now managed to skew the racial complexion, and we are doing our best to change the racial complexion of those factories. If you can move on to the next one. Again, you can skip that because this just gives you our expenditure against the budget. But this slide, honorable members, gives you a sense in terms of the income that we are generating from each factory. Obviously, in some instances, it would link with the provincial government, but in some cases, you'll find that the manufacturing would normally be in other provinces. For instance, in the Western Cape, you may find that we have more orders, and because of the time pressures, we'll divide the orders in the different factories so that we don't have people idle. You'll find that areas like KwaZulu-Natal, the Devon factory, we would not have received orders directly from the KZN government. And the amount of money generated will be zero, the same with Sishihu. However, what we have also done, and you'll see in the next slide, is that even though there was no direct orders placed with KwaZulu-Natal or Sishihu, we were able to take work from the other area, and we managed to take it to those factories. Especially Devon, honorable members will recall that this factory was damaged by a storm and it was closed down by the inspectors, and we had to demarcate one section of the factory, which was the canteen, and we had to erect the marquee because the other section was not safe, and currently Public Works is doing the renovation. We had to take some of the staff to the Pietermaritzburg, which is about 100 kilometers away, and try to find accommodation for them there. And then within Sishihu, because it was a new factory, even though we didn't have orders, we managed to take work from other factories and take it to those to Sishiku so that they can produce. But what we could not do was to attach the order values to those factories, because the order is directly with those factories. If you can move on to the next slide. Again, if you can move on to this is just a repeat of the previous one. Move on to the next slide, William. 1112. Well, I don't know what happened, Honorable Chair. The slides are no longer showing. Honorable Chair, I'll pause. It does seem as if Ms. Dwengu is having problems.
Well, I don't know. Initially, thought with me, I think it's my gadget, but I'm going through the presentations. I'm off the on what I was then circulated to by community section. Can I just check if members are able to go through their own? If you can direct us to the presentation, because I think we're towards the second line.
Yes. Okay.
Remember that
yeah.
We are waiting.
It's back, Chenna.
Okay.
It's back, Chen.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
No, okay.
He
so we're still in 1112.
Yes. He's back, Chen.
Okay.
He's back, Chen. Just
right.
To go back to the point that I was raising around KZN. You'll notice that KZN, the income generated would not have been directly with them, but they would have contributed in the Pietermaritzburg. And you'll notice that the income that they were able to make, even though they did not have orders, amounted to 611,000. And that was because of the orders of small units that they had to do that was provided by the neighboring factories like the REN. And we are hoping and doing our best in marketing so that we can access some of the orders from the provincial government, because they received one of the biggest orders that was funded under the National Department of Health that we did centrally under the stimulus package. But when it comes to them having to place orders directly with us, there is still a challenge, even though the National Department has directed them to work with entities like SEE. If you can move on, Ms. Welile. Mr. Welile. Mr. Dwengu. This just gives you the analysis in terms of the breakdown of raw materials. You can go to 1114. This is just a breakdown of the invoices that we processed. You can move on because it explains how we came to the amounts. And now the last slide, honorable members, reflect the amount of money that was allocated. The expenditure and also the in summary the percentage in terms of that is in terms of the public employment services and having worked with SEE and the augmentation that the public employment services did receive with respect to the transfers in relation to compensation fund, I mean, sorry, Productivity SA, and it did not receive additional funding towards. Thank you, DJ. I don't know if there's other things that I have omitted. My colleagues are there to assist if I omitted something. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG and Mr. Monotoba, on the presentation. Honorable members, there is the presentation. What we are going to do, if I may put across to members, is that we are going to ask questions, and in then asking those questions, clarified, satisfied, we will then release the department, because we are to then make our own assessment, which is going to be a preliminary assessment on the basis of the presentations and the quotas that we have then given. And then after that, which I think we should have, well, it's not a strange mess, we should have first started by adopting our report of the third and the fourth quarter. Then when we are done, we will then do the adoption and whatever. So now, we are then going to be asking questions to the department, taking into account that there's nothing wrong if we take it from the first quarter, if we have been looking into our analysis and what we have been presented and what we are presented today. So, I'm sorry, honorable members must then understand that is what we are then going to do. It's our preliminary assessment. We are still going to, they are still going to come back and present their APP. We're doing the work now. So after questions and clarities, we'll just have a few minutes break to allow them to leave, and we then do our assessment as the committee, because it's going to be our report. It's going to be how we then reflect on them when we are finally dealing with the APP and preparing for the PRRR. I hope I'm understood. Having said that, honourable members, any takers?
Honourable, sorry
for that. I've received an apology. Mr. Ngwezi is not going to be in, and Honourable Dana is going to join us later. I don't know whether she has joined the event. What's the first one?
Honourable Inanna.
Mkonto.
Honorable Zuma.
Okay. Can we mute, comrades? I'm sorry, members, please.
Mkonto.
No, I heard you, honorable member.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Any other taker?
Zuma.
I've noted you, Honourable Zuma. If members are able to gadget in terms of hands, can I be assisted also by the committee section? Who was the other one?
Honourable Inanna, Chair.
No, it's Honourable Inanna, it's Honourable Mkhonto, it's Honourable Zuma.
Honorable Ntlangwini.
Honorable Ntlangwini. Right. Okay, Honorable Inanna.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I welcome the presentation, and good morning to all my colleagues in the department and the DM. Chairperson, I am interested on slide number 16. About the indicators that are put there. My question, Chairperson, to the presenter is that why low indicators are being set? Because one might be deceived by the 100% achievement, and yet the targets were so very low. Why would the targets not be higher than one? Because it doesn't make a sufficient assessment of the performance because the bar is so very, very, very low. The second person is on slide number 30 on the misconduct. Although I accept that there is a racial and the gender presentation of the nature of the people that have transgressed, what is it that the department wants to achieve in coming out with a racial and a gender-based misconduct to tell us? And why would the position held by those implicated not only also be input? Because if we want to achieve something so very much complete, it's right to make this gender and racial issues, but also the positions of the people implicated. What positions are they having? The other person is on slide number 34 about the challenges. One of such challenges is about fraud, but we are not told how many of those were completed and how much money was frauded, and how that fraud is going to be paid back. If we can get the breakdown of the amount of money and the strategy of how to get back that money, that would be very sufficient. Thank you, Mr. President, I appreciate.
Honorable Mkhonto.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you and honorable members and colleagues. Chair, I have just one question. To those provinces that are underperforming, are they adequately staffed? I just want to know that, because seemingly they are the culprits, that is Mpumalanga, KZN, and Gauteng. In each and everything that is presented, they seem not to be performing. So I want to know if they are adequately staffed. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhonto. Honorable Zuma.
Thanks, Chairperson. Morning, Chair. Morning, Honorable Members. I welcome the presentation and also appreciate the work that has been done by the department. Chairperson, I just want to get the clarity from the department that what about those employers that they are just withhold the money for the employees? Some of them, they didn't pay them. Is there any major steps that were taken about those employers, or is there any follow-up by the department? Secondly, how are they going to improve the performance of those provinces that didn't perform very well? Is there any provision by the department to assist those provinces? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Zuma. Honorable Ntlangwini.
Thank you very much, Chair. And my apologies for locking on late. I'm having a network problem in this Acacia Park. It keeps on kicking me out or and in, so I don't even know if my question that I'm having is asked, but was asked before. But anyway, I will shoot it.
Long time no see.
Hey, Chetty, please. I'm running between committees, and I even see they don't turn up large.
I don't see that.
All right. On a serious note, Mine is just very brief. On slide, there was a slide that noted the amount of cases that is still pending. And part of the reasons was because it's due to lockdown. And we will have to sort out some of these cases, DG, very urgently. Because if we have a court system that is already on Zoom and visual, what is the delay of department in handling some of these cases, at least via visual platform, so that next time your cases that are pending are not that much within the department? Because really it's concerning, like you have an amount of, I think, 35 for misuse of a state vehicle and all of that. So some of these cases need to be sorted out. What steps have you put in place to ensure that these cases get sorted as speedily and urgently as possible? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ntlangwini. Any other questions, clarities before I ask mine? I want, mine is on placement. You know, in when doing constituency work, you come across young people that are so frustrated. And DG, and the DM and DG, you will call me to order if the question is misplaced, but I don't think it is. Young people who are frustrated of not being placed, being placed, and in us, some of them, just talking informally on what they suspect may be a challenge. When I was in grade 12, when I was at my first, there was a party, we fought, I assaulted somebody, a charge was laid. That was about years ago. I had a criminal record. I was arrested. I was in Royal North End prison for 4 months. That was about, they say it's about 10 years, others more. They suspect that it may be one of the contributory factors, that when they are checked, there is still that which is a challenge. An advice then was that we then have to check with the Department of Justice, because when on inquiring on this, again informally, I was told that it's a problem of the system in the Department of Justice. Other cases where it's withdrawn, let's say I open a case against somebody, and at a particular time, or the case was withdrawn in the court, but in the system. So I just want to check that there are these challenges of placement. Have you, as the department, at one point, gave yourself time to just check? Is it allowed that you just check? Why there is this challenge of young people not being placed? It's something that has just crossed my mind now, that I think majority of young people are faced with that. And I do think that as this portfolio committee, if we want to leave a legacy in this term, those are the things that we must unblock. Those are the things that we must unblock, because a person, it means that person will never be employed if he is checked, only to find that he had a criminal record of about 10, 15 years, and he's stuck. He can't get work. That's what I want to to check. I think on other questions, or the last one, GM, my understanding is that there is a commission on national minimum wage which is supposed to give a report. My understanding is that in fact we were preparing as the committee section to see how best can we call them to take us through if they have finalized that, but then boom, the pandemic and everything was then at a standstill. Is there, have you been as the department, is that report now a report that is for public consumption, or are there still some challenges in terms of that task that was given to that commission on the issue of national minimum wage? Thank you very much.
Chair, can we allow the DG to respond to some of the questions? If there are other outstanding issues, I might come in.
Okay, yes. All right. DG?
Thank you, Chair, and the honorable members. The question asked by Honorable Inanna, which is reflected in slide 16 on the indicators why we seem to be setting low targets, he seems to intimate that the bar is set very low. The bar is not set low at all, Honorable Chair. When we set targets, we look at the resources that we have that are available, and on the basis of that, and the resources we are referring to both funds and human resources, and on the basis of that, we then set our targets. And I suppose that it would have been a different question if we did not achieve those targets, because I seem to remember that there was a time where we were struggling to achieve the targets, and the question was, why are you struggling to set targets that you are struggling to achieve targets that you've set for yourselves? And now that we're achieving them, there's a feeling that we might have set them at a very low. We haven't. What we do every time we achieve a target, we improve it. Because if you have achieved it this year, there's no reason for us to set you that target at the same level. So if you do 10 things and you've achieved them, we increase the target to 15 or 20. And again, based on the resources that we have available. On the misconduct, what is the purpose of the gender and the racial reporting that we have provided, and what are the positions of the people that are in the list? The purpose of the gender and the racial reporting is that it gives us a sense of what are the challenges that are experienced by our officials from the different race, different gender, and we come from different backgrounds, and the fact that we work together doesn't necessarily mean that we were at the same levels in terms of our social background. We come from different backgrounds. So when we put together interventions, we're able to use this information that so-and-so gender who falls under this race might have committed a misconduct. But when we take a decision in terms of the sanction and the assistance that must be provided to the individual. We need to look at the social background of that person, and then we make a decision on the basis of that. Other positions, I will not be in a position to give you that information now, but it's something that it's information that is readily available that we can make available to the committee. And on the slide 34 on fraud, how many cases were concluded, and how much was the department defrauded, and what are the strategies to get the money back? The committee will remember that we in the last two sittings, the last but one sitting, we reported to the committee that we detected a fraud committed by some of the officials that are at the Employment Health and Wellness Unit, and that there's a forensic investigation underway.
I don't know whether it's your background or it's my gadget. There's a noise that is a bit disturbing me. It may be my gadget, I don't know. But there's no body who is unmuted except you. But you may continue.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. We indicated that that fraud was amounting to about just over two million, and that the investigation was at an advanced stage. We have received a preliminary report, and that the alleged main culprits were not interviewed at the time, and that the service provider was, or the investigators were following the leads. So that's the information that we have. And if we have not indicated how many were concluded, we can again provide us that information. So it is readily available. I've asked the DDG Corporate Services, who's connected as well, to get us that information immediately. The question raised by Honorable Mkhonto, whether provinces are adequately staffed, those that are not performing well, the Northern Cape and Malanga. The part of the reasons why these provinces are not doing well, in our assessment, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that they are not adequately resourced. It has more to do with poor planning, and secondly, not monitoring the work that is supposed to be done by the province. If you set a target, and you only pray that you will achieve that target, you're never going to achieve that target, because you must actually do something about it. And if the people that are supposed to do or are supposed to enable you to achieve that are not doing what they're supposed to do, you need to act on that. And when we ask the provinces why they're not performing well, they actually confirm that a number of the labor centers that fall under them, they were not doing what they're supposed to do, and they have taken steps, and they've developed the strategies to improve their performance, and we have taken steps to make sure that this underperformance is addressed. we have held the provincial heads, you know, accountable for the poor performance. On the question raised by Honorable Zuma, whether employers were not paying employees, whether we're following up on them, any actions or steps that are taken to make sure that they pay employees. In the report that we provided, Chairperson, we reflected on the number of money that we managed to get on behalf, acting on behalf of the employees. So instances where these cases are brought to our attention, we do act, and we make sure that the monies that are due to the to those employees indeed are received by those employees. And if not, we then take the matters to court. And again, the Deputy Director General responsible for inspections and enforcement services is here. She's free to add, Chair, if you'll allow her to add on that. How are we planning to assist the provinces that are not performing well? Part of our performance review is to look at across each province how a specific labor center is performing. And on the basis of that, we then intervene as head office. So we do quarterly assessments as a department. It's quite an involved process that we get that we follow. And if a province is not doing well, we then develop plans to assist that province. In fact, it is that province that must develop those plans, not head office. And the head office can only make certain resources available to that province if we need people who have financial skills in a specific province, we make those resources available. And if, for instance, we see that a province is battling in terms of inspections, we also make inspectors from other provinces available to that province. To make sure that they meet their targets, but it's also up to that province to indicate that indeed they need assistance. So we do intervene, and we're now in the process of one of the things that we've identified is the shortage of finance and supply chain skills in provinces, and we are in the process of addressing that. We want to make sure that we deal with all the lack of controls that AG has raised by making sure that we put competent people in finance and supply chain positions in all the provinces so that we can address the control deficiencies in those areas. Honorable Nhlanhla, the question on misconduct. I agree with you, we need to move swiftly in terms of resolving all these cases, and we are working on all these cases to make sure that by the end of the financial year they are resolved, all of them. I'm sure by the end of the financial year, when we come to the committee next year, we will then say we have resolved all these cases. And again, DDT responsible for corporate services this year. If she wants to add, she can add to Mr. Chairperson. But we're working case by case to make sure that all these cases are resolved. You will notice that the abuse, accidents that our inspectors get involved in and that is then classified as a wasteful expenditure, because we have to pay third parties whenever the inspectors get involved in that. So what we have done now in the process of what we call loss control units, that committee that will look at all these cases, because in the PFMA there's provision that if you were doing a work as an inspector, you have a driver's license, you have you were authorized to go wherever you've been, and in the process you get involved in an accident, there's provision that the state can absorb the costs that are associated with that, and therefore should not be classified as wasteful expenditure. So we are looking at that. We should be getting an advisory note on that, and that's the work that this loss control committee is going to be doing. Chairperson, on placement, you're right, there are a variety of reasons why these young people are not absorbed, are not placed in employment. And I think that the bigger part of what you raised does contribute to this. And maybe what we may need to do going forward, Mr. October, is to work very closely with the Department of Justice to see to it that in instances where we've picked up ourselves that there are cases like that, we find a way of assisting these young people. And maybe that's part of that counseling that we do. These young people should actually feel free to talk to our counselors and request whatever assistance that they require to make sure that Department of Justice deals with these issues. But of course, there are other reasons why they are not placed. I think Mr. Rotoba will talk to that. On the National Minimum Wage Commission, we haven't had sight of the report, chairperson, by the National Minimum Wage Commission, and the delays have been attributed to the time that it has taken for them to get access to quarterly labor force survey, for that matter, and of course the lockdown contributed a lot in the commission not finalizing the report timeously. Mr. Seafield is here. He can add more on what I've just said. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Is there any other, before I allow the DM to come in, are there any other further questions of clarity from members on the presentation? If there are none, DM, would you like to come in?
Morning, DM. Sorry, Chair.
Chair, I see that the DDG Bahumi Matebesi would like to come in.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Chairperson, I think the DG responded very well to the other questions, except just to add on one, on why our young people are not being employed, or how are we going to assist them in making sure that those that have good criminal records do get employed. I think I can add a bit there also.
because from practical experience that we encountered at one of the departments that I used to work at, basically the onus is on the applicant to disclose that they have a criminal record, number one. And then when they do, then we assess it versus, we actually look at the transgression, and we also ascertain whether the transgression is going to impact negatively with the type of work that they will be appointed. For example, a person who's been convicted of fraud would be risky to be placed in a place where they're going to work with or that possibly they could commit some fraudulent activities. And then most of the time we are assisted by NIA to also assess, say for example, somebody was convicted or had a criminal record because of drunken driving. Now drunken driving it would be harmless if you are going to work in an environment where you are not going to be expected to be driving around. Therefore, we look at those kind of things, whether they will actually impact on the work that you're going to do. But I totally agree with the DG that I think Department of Justice will also assist in terms of the other criminal records that people would have committed, so that we are able to open the circle wider. And then, Chairperson, I was requested by the DG that I should provide information on the misconduct and fraud cases, the levels at which these people that commit the misconduct and fraud are at. I'm still waiting for my team to send me information, but if the meeting gets to be concluded before we provide the information, we can always provide it in writing before the end of the day today, before the end of business today. I think that's all that I wanted to add, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much, ma'am. I want to, I want to make a suggestion or a proposal that will it not be wise with these young kids to immediately people come in, you take an initiative of asking. I know there are crimes that are not beyond being pardoned. For an example, rape, murder. Well, I don't know. Murder will then be evaluated. What was called the factors. But will it not be advisable that they be encouraged to disclose? And it must not be left to an individual. I think as a department, we must take that initiative. Remember, we are a portfolio that is to create a conducive environment to ensure that people are then employed. And therefore, we have to go into those areas which we think that they may be uncomfortable, but because we are really interested in ensuring that people don't live in poverty and squalor because of mistakes. For instance, I was told that there was a young woman sometime when they were students who stole a lipstick. A lipstick, and he was convicted. But she was brave enough. And that had to be looked at, and whether because she was convicted, there was then to be a presidential pardon at that time. So I'm just throwing some lessons and experiences to some of these things that were told informally, which I do think that we are to be proactive. So that will be my proposal, and I'm sure, as the committee, as we move forward, we'll have to interact with the Department of Justice, so that we really people are serious of ensuring that young people are to be employed, and therefore they must also be discouraged in committing crimes, crimes of young people are very adventurous at times. They do things to judge, to prove. But it's, I'm saying as Department of Employment and Labor, really have to look into those circumstances and environments that are making, that are, have got a potential or are making it difficult for young people to be employed. So that's why the question therefore says that if it's not too much DM and DG, labor centers must be proactive in all these areas where these different provinces, they must just be proactive. I want to put that as a proposal to the department, and we will monitor that toward as the term, as we are moving with the term. I just want to check if there are any clarities before then I allow the DM.
May I come and check before the DM?
Yes,
there's somebody before Honorable Nonsele.
It was me, Chairperson Egimuilwa, the Inspector General. I wanted to add information.
Okay, Inspector General. Then after that, is then going to be.
Can I come before the Inspector General, so that
okay.
She is part of the responsive.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Thank you, Chairman.
Hold on. Who else after Honorable Nonsele? In terms of members? None.
There's also a hand up, Chair, from Mr. Sam Murotoba. A hand is up, I see there.
They will come after Honorable Nonsele, because they are respondents. Honorable Nonsele?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Morning, Honorable members. Thanks for the input by the department from the DG and the Deputy DG who represented him. Chair, is just an additional point on the issue that you've raised, because I think this is indeed there was an article just to illustrate the case, an article some time ago, wherein someone who was at the time 17 years old was arrested for petty crime, snatching sweets at a Shoprite, Petters, and then was jailed for a fine, and then the person then worked at a particular company. That company discovered, which was 30 years later, discovered sometime later, this person was infected, has an offense. And she unfortunately applied for a senior post now. And they raised this question again, that whether she has any criminal offense. And quite honestly, she had forgotten about that incident that happened more than 30 years ago. And she said, no, nothing. And she lost the job, and by extension, lost employment because she was deemed to have been dishonest to the employer in terms of her background. And that's one to indicate the level of and the extent of the problem that you have just raised, that in the manner that it has affected many people. In some instances, it has been used as a form of, for lack of a better word, discrimination. Because in this case, it was both the case of discrimination, because this person was, in fact, almost about to assume a senior position. And this was, in fact, activated. Quite unfortunately, she has been there for more than 5 years in that institution. And this matter was never an issue. And then suddenly it found traction because she stood to be appointed at a much more senior post. Then the second point is around the issue of slide 35 on the outsourcing of fraud cases. I'm not very sure, maybe, but if DG and his team can just explain to us what is it that mean, does it mean when fraud cases are outsourced. I'm not saying that it's wrong to outsource, but just to give us a background so that we understand what exactly happened, how is it undertaken, is it an issue of monetary value, or is it an issue of both monetary on one side, but also value for money to the department, in the sense that cases get properly processed and everyone who is supposed to be subjected to due process is subjected. No cases is disappeared and so on. Sort of a profile of such exercises and the success rate for that. If maybe DG and his team can maybe also help just to take us into confidence on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nonsele. DG and your team responding on the issue that has been raised.
Chair, thank you. Maybe let me start with the last question and then colleagues will come in. On the how we deal with fraud cases. What we do, because we don't have the forensic investigation capacity in the department, we then look for that capacity outside the department, just purely for investigation purposes. And when we and it has nothing to do with the amount of money, but it has to do with the activity itself. So if you've defrauded the department, it doesn't matter if it's 2 rands or so, we get the matter investigated. What we've done recently, which in a way works much better for the 2 funds that we have, is that we have brought in the internal or we've built the internal capacity by separating risk into 2. So you have a unit that deals with purely risk management, and you have a unit that deals with fraud, and they do the investigation themselves. And given maybe the number of cases, they will then, if they need an external assistance, they will then sort that external assistance. But in the department itself, we don't have that capacity to investigate fraud-related cases, and that's why we look for people outside. The success rate has to, I mean, it depends on the how you handle the case once it goes to either the disciplinary process or if you're referring it to external law enforcement agencies, how they handle the case going forward, and even our internally how we handle disciplinary cases. There are cases where that we've lost, even though we had a good investigation. There are cases that we've won. So it really depends. It's like taking a matter to court. And again, Chair, it has nothing to do with the amount of money that is involved. It has to do with the with the activity itself. I think on the other matter that Honorable Nonzela raised about you know, how people are affected by their previous records, you know, if they're involved in any criminal activity, whether petty or or serious. My experience with this, having sat in a number of interviews and also having had to deal with these cases when they are brought to my attention, is that generally there is no common understanding of the need for an individual to disclose. Because if you disclose, and the people that are interviewing you may prejudice you because you already have this criminal record. And maybe that's why people feel the need not to disclose.
Why don't you, G-O-G, okay, mail. You got mail.
Okay. And I lost my trail of thought. So, and the example that Honorable Nazele gave of somebody who was already in the system and not, or this information is now used against him or her. Because there's a promotion that this person may get. I think that borders on unfair labor practice, because if it is something that was disclosed long time ago, why are they bringing this thing up again? Because in this institution you sat with this thing and there was no need to act on this person, or you haven't acted on this person and now you're bringing the matter up, and that borders on the unfair labor practice, and that that should be dealt with by the
the prejudice, and therefore the requirement to get people to disclose should be removed from our ESSA form. But rather what we should do, and that this is something that we are doing, which the DG alluded to, is to advise people in case they confine to a counselor, and we proactively ask them if they have such cases, and we then guide them on the process that they need to follow, and even when they go to the interview, to be upfront to disclose, and to also, if the case is still against their name, there are procedures that we advise them to follow to go through to the Department of Justice to have that removed. And like we said, the discretion is now left mainly to the employer. Public service, unfortunately, could not come to the court to indicate what is it that we are going to do in the public service. Hence, there is still that requirement. But currently, they've now put that responsibility also to the employer to say it is at the discretion of the DG to decide whether the case that the person was initially convicted to warrants whether a person can be employed or not employed. Thank you, DG.
May
Chair,
I come in,
Chair? Inspector General wanted to speak as well.
Okay, Shimei.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to add to what the DG said in terms of underperforming provinces. And besides the pending issue, I think the setting of targets also takes into consideration dynamics such as staff turnover and leaves. We know that there are leaves, particularly study leaves and vacation leaves, that have got to be properly planned for. And just to also be more specific in terms of responses, when you look at Northern Cape, for instance, the area of non-performance was around OHS inspections. At that time, they had about 6 OHS inspections, and there were only 2 available, because one was on maternity leave, 3 had left. I think besides inspectors being poached by other government departments and other institutions, there's also intra-provincial movements. We'll see staff moving from one province to the other, and so this province was affected. But in terms of OHS, they now have an additional resource of 25 inspections, which is, in our view, quite adequate. And when you look at KZN, the area of struggle was around statutory services. They didn't achieve the target, and part of the reason was that, unfortunately, with statutory services, you only have one person. So if that post becomes vacant, then it affects the entire province. I think it was the same thing for Mpumalanga. With Limpopo, they were greatly affected by high vacancy rates in the Polokwane Labour Centre. So I thought I should add that information in terms of the provinces themselves and underperformance. And the other thing that I wanted to give more information on is an issue that was raised by Honorable Zuma regarding what happens to employers that withhold money from employees. I just want to add that specifically we find this quite prevalent in the national minimum wage space, where you find that there's either going to be underpayment, mostly underpayment, and in those instances we'll then try and recover the money through the issuance of notices. We normally would give employers 15 days to pay the money to employees. And slide 45 and slide 47 attest to the initiative that is put in place in that regard. And then also the recent trend that we're picking up, Chairperson, is around the issue of TERF payments, where you find there will be a total withholding of money or partial payment or delayed payment. So that's the dynamic that is showing its face. and we're able to deal with that also through Section 32 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. And most of the time, 90% of the time, we're able to recover the money that should be given back to the employees. Another form of withholding or illegally taking money off employees through UI will be instances where you find that the pay slip will show that there has been money that has been deducted. But when you go to the enforcement part of the Unemployment Insurance Act, you find that that money has not been paid to the UI commissioner. So in that way, you also recover that money and it goes back to the pocket of the employees. Thank you, Chair, for the time.
Thank you very much, honorable members. What's happening now? Oh, gosh. Oh, thank you very much, honorable members. I think we have asked clarities, and I would want us to challenge all of us, GM, as you will be coming to, that this matter that we have raised of criminal records, and maybe we must have another time and sit down and look into it and come with a concrete do all the research so that we are really I feel we assist in unblocking blockages that are really creating problems for young people in particular. DM?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think I need to start with the last point that the Honorable Chairperson has raised. I think if you read through the Criminal Procedure Act in terms of expansion of criminal offense from records, there is a period stipulated there of 10 years that if you may apply 10 years if 10 years has lapsed after the date of the conviction for the offense. And that person has been, not been convicted of any other offense and sentenced to a period of imprisonment without the option of a fine during those 10 years. Or a person may was sentenced to any of the sentences set out in Part 2 of this form. So there is a procedure even outlined there that what needs to be done. You apply to the Director General of the Justice Constitutional Development Department. And there is a procedure that is stipulated there, and I think that we can make readily available of the processes. We can actually further discuss as to what we want to see happening, and I'm sure we can, together with the Department of Public Service Administration and Constitutional Development Committee, discuss further as to how do we incorporate all this and how do we and I'm sure even other sentences can be expunged even before they are expired, but we need to get that legal advice and whether do we incorporate it in our own policies and policy positions. Having said that, Honorable Chairperson, in closing, I would like to say that as a department, as a ministry chairperson, we commit ourselves to forward to your honorable staff through the chairperson responses where we fell short and of details to members in due course. And we also want to make this call once again that all queries of honorable members should be shared with our officials in the ministry to follow up and resolve on those matters. Because I think Honorable Chairperson made that point even yesterday in the hybrid plenary session, that it does not really help where every time when we discuss matters of the department, honorable members continue to say they've got hundreds and hundreds of queries on labor issues that they are having in their office.
How does it help honorable members, those members who have submitted to your good self these queries and complaints without any way or near resolution of those problems? So if we are able to bring them to us, we are able to say, we have received so many queries from Honorable Zuma, and out of those 10 queries from Honorable Zuma or complainants, this is what the department has been able to resolve on, and these are the outstanding to all other honorable members, so that when we are able to track all the complaints, we are able to report back, and honorable members can be able to report back to those complainants who complain to them. I think it's a humble plea once more that we are making that better, so that we will help you to resolve your problem when you know in essence that those queries and problems at your disposal, for as long as they don't reach our office, they will never be resolved. So please work with us so that we can be able to work with you. We humbly request you to work with each other. And I want to take this opportunity, Chairperson, to thank you. Thank you so much.
Very much, DG. I'm sorry, DM. We will have to look into the matter. I agree with you in the statement. But what laws are amended and looked into from time to time. It's quite a very sensitive issue. But it's fine. We'll deal with that, working with all the people that actually work with. Having said that, honorable members, we are now going to, well, should I say take a 10-minute break, Zolan, whilst we are then now allowing the department to leave us.
Yes, Chair.
So that we then look into our preliminary assessment. But members must not lock out.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Come again.
We want to thank you for having us. Here you are saying we must lock
okay.
we must lock out and allow you to process Parliament.
Yes.
So thank you for having had us in this meeting.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. And members must not they must not log out, please. In fact, it's just supposed to be 5 minutes. Where are my chocolates, Mr. Baker? Where are my chocolates, Mr. Baker? Where are my chocolates?
They're coming, but I can't. I wanted to fax the chocolates through to you, but you wouldn't accept them.
There's post nets. Put them on.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I was trying to fax them.
I thought I was going to see you yesterday.
Yesterday I was sitting in my office, not in the parliament.
Oh.
You had the pleasure of the Honorable Carter.
No, it's fine. It was fine, but I thought you would be there to give support.
Yeah, and I was clapping, but I was sitting in my office clapping.
Oh, okay. By the looks, they okay. Apumile Zolani, ne? Zolani?
Sheba, they are Apuma, Timbong, they are from Sitaba.
Bani?
Sitaba, no look call, Sitaba, Timan, Uvena.
Ubando?
Where department, Globe, they tell physical, who talks to.
I'm a Apum.
now. Kumele se.
Oh, Nkosi yam. Welcome, Nkosi yini mntana sekhaya. Umdlezana wenzwa lento nakana nyana saleke. Okay. I forgot, sorry, good honorable members. I forgot to welcome back Mr. Gabeni from here, Maternity Leave. I would have thought that she will come with a pioneer or a junior member of this committee just to see her. I'm told it's a she. But welcome back, Mr. Gabeni. We have got new members. In fact, only one member that you may not be familiar with, Ms. Nkonto. And at an appropriate time, Honorable Nkonto will have to see your face. Gosh, otherwise, I hope you are fine with your cute little girl. And I forgot to do that. Members will know that Ms. Gabeni was on maternity leave and she is now officially back. Having said that, honorable members, now, honorable Nkonto? And Akikuva says.
On my video, the system will kick me out.
Okay. Honorable members, there was the presentation. We are doing a preliminary assessment. Anybody who wants to, with the understanding that it's going to be work, should I say work in progress, because remember that they are still going to come back and present the APP. But this process is a process that is assisting us to be able, as much as it's the first time that we are really in a new normal, it's the first time that we were subjected to this. As committees, which there's nothing wrong, but it's also giving us an opportunity to be able to dip deeper and be able to make observations that are going to be informed and have that ability to say to them, but you have targeted 20 and you only managed to do 12. But you are at 99% in terms of budget usage. So it's going to give us that opportunity of really tracking. So if members are ready to do that, it's fine. If they feel that we must try and get another day, if it's about 2 to 3 hours to do that. Maybe some members are not ready yet because we got the responses today. It's fine with me. I'm trying to be flexible because I don't want us to do work hush-hush without really concentrating and on the work that we are doing. Any takers? Honorable Nkonto, I can see you have got a serious problem, Honorable Nkonto. Any other person wants to speak? Not unless you want me to decide for you members. I would gladly do that. I don't have a problem. Can I then make a suggestion for the committee? Are you still here? Are members still around?
Honorable Dana?
I am here. I said that we can make a decision.
Okay. Is there? I can make a recommendation to you. Anybody who wants to, who has got a different view?
Chairperson. I don't have a different view, but I do second Honorable Inanna. That it just take the decision as the chairperson.
Okay. My recommendation will be that we'll sit down in the office of the chair and the secretariat to just identify a suitable date, and then we'll cut back. And I'm requesting that all members please be avail yourself, because I really do want. I think this process is really going to assist us when they come back for APPs. We'll be much ready and more empowered. So what we will do. Thank you very much. We'll do that, and then we'll then come back. When we'll then be coming back, honorable members, we'll do two things, Mr. Sakaza. We'll adopt the quarter three and the quarter four report, and then quickly come through. And I don't think we'll take much time in the preliminary assessment, because we have given members a little bit of time between now and the date that we're going to identify, which is not going to be very far. Agree?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a very good idea.
I agree, Madam Chair.
Honorable Mkhondo has got a problem. Having said that, honorable members, I